Welcome to the Overreact Podcast.
And in a society that puts women in a box,
let's overreact.
Yes, I am Monica Mohoy, your host, and I am a woman.
I'm Angela Womboy, and I am a woman.
I'm Lash Angela, and I am a woman. I'm ready to overreact. So today, we're going to actually overreact between the definition of a woman that's a daughter, a woman that's a mother. So Angela, take it away.
Yes, so one of my friends posted on Facebook a post 5 years ago that caught my attention. It says, it's been stated that some men want equality for their daughters that they don't want for their wives. A piece was written on this about Donald Trump and how he's empowered and mentored Ivanka Trump to be a beast and a boss in comparison to how he's treated his wives, girlfriends, and other female friends and colleagues. And Ross poses a question and says, men, are we still this insecure? So one of his followers proceeds to reply to him. A young lady says, my father, a noted feminist in his family and an alpha Nigerian male, raised me to have nothing less than A's and nothing less than a doctorate. As I write this, he's currently asking me about my second doctorate and when I'll start my million-dollar enterprise. On the flip side, though, he didn't allow my mom to pursue her schooling further because he wanted to take care of her and didn't want her to work so much or worry about needing an education. In a sense, my father was toughest on me more so than he was on my brothers to be successful and at the top of everything. However, he perceived my mom as a woman in need of rescuing and putting up in a cage. Of course, my mom being a descendant of a fiercely independent mom herself wasn't having any of that. Men raise strong daughters who won't need any other man except her dad, but want wives that they can rescue or wives who need rescuing.
Wow.
Some food for thought, ladies.
Yes. This is the Overreact Podcast where we ask the tough questions,
have hard conversations,
and get uncomfortable to trigger change.
Yes.
So the first thing that like triggered my mind is that this was written 5 years ago. This was written in like 2017.
Yeah, in the 2000s.
And when we think about, you know, today's conversation where it's about the woman that was and the woman that is, I don't think much has changed really. Mm-hmm. I do. Okay, personally, I can't relate with that girl because when I think about my dad, he's never treated us differently between me and my mom. Like, he's never discouraged my mom to go to work. He's never not discouraged her to pursue her goals. And if anything, he wants her to do it, and he wants us to do it. So I can't relate with her, but I do. And not to say that I don't see it happening. And I feel sometimes I think like it's more a common problem with Asian and African families.
Yeah.
And it's actually it's a deep conversation, and it's something that we should also think about when we're dating. Do we date men who encourage us to pursue our goals, to pursue our dreams, and not intimidated? That's why your friend asked, are we this insecure?
Yes.
You know, and are not intimidated with you pursuing. How many times have you heard women say, oh, you know, I think my boyfriend or my husband's insecure because
I'm making more money. Yes.
Yeah. I've never even thought that actually a man can treat his wife differently.
I just think also it might be a part of also the woman's upbringing, you know. So for my mom, you know, watching her grandmother, my grandfather took really well care of my grandma. Like, even after he passed, he made so much money and made so many investments that she never really had to work another day in her life. Whereas I think in contrast, my dad gave my mom the space to be whoever she wanted, but also there are traditional norms that she grew up watching and just fulfilled those roles just subliminally, you know, the African woman role, being submissive and, you know,
being in the kitchen.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, the homemaker.
But she enjoys it though. So yeah. It's not even a thing of being weak or just being a woman. She actually enjoys.
Yeah. And that's okay. Mm-hmm. And that's okay.
Yeah. I love the case study, and I agree with all of you that sometimes these norms and conditionings are more prevalent in the African households and Asian households. What a timely conversation, because we just celebrated the International Women's Day, and the theme was to recognize that gender equality is very much needed for a future that is sustainable for all. And we are all about breaking the biases that we consciously know and unconsciously know don't, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So to think that an African dad would want more for the daughter and not want more for the wife who
is the one beside him.
Exactly. You are creating maybe generational wealth or even a legacy with your wife and not with your daughter, because at some point your daughter will find her own man or
path.
she will create her own path. So the case study is really shocking for me, and to think that, you know, Nigerian dads.
And I think I can relate to this man's statement in a sense, because I feel like, you know, my dad, he has a lot of daughters. I'm one of five girls. And also I think watching maybe his sisters not get to where they want, that has become my dad's motivation for making sure that we as his daughters never have to depend on a man for our success, for our own care and our well-being, our future.
Imagine an equal world where women just wake up in the morning and they do whatever they want. We created this table for ourselves,
yes,
so that we can have these conversations for women, you know, who are tuned and they just needed a reminder,
yeah,
right?
And to challenge men to change their narratives
and,
as well.
This year, there are two women that stood up for me. There's an activist and an entrepreneur. So it's a documentary that I watched somewhere. And what stood out is because these women are Arab and they woke up one morning, they said, okay, I have five kids, I'm a wife, and there's a society that, you know, wants me or reminds me constantly that I'm supposed to stay in that marriage because, yeah, I'm Muslim, because we're supposed to be submissive to our men. And what stood out for me was how she actually planned the exit game. Mm-hmm. So she was packing smartly for the kids. Mm-hmm. She could hide some of the clothes and some of the belongings with the neighbor so that the husband doesn't even have a clue.
Mm-hmm.
And then she got into the car driving to an airport in Tel Aviv. She's Palestinian. And she was going to join her brother in Iceland. Okay. Imagine a Muslim woman with five kids.
Palestinian as well.
Yes. Relocating without anything.
Mm. Wow.
In Iceland. And she has built so much for other women who want to, you know, forge their own path,
mm-hmm.
Craft, you know, their own legacy, because she has built this equality center in Iceland where if you're coming from a different country, especially a Muslim country, so you don't speak Icelandic and you don't speak English.
Mm-hmm.
So she has a translation center that represents you if you get on the wrong side of the law,
mm-hmm.
and gives women an opportunity to sort of like settle, get a grounding and the feel of the European culture shock and just recreate themselves.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and just to bring it back home in the African continent, there's a woman who relocated with her husband to the Netherlands, and she has made this multi-billion cleaning agency in the Netherlands. And she was just telling her story where she was a stay-at-home mom, and she was reminded constantly that, you know, you can't work. It's the men who go out there and work.
Mm.
And she would look out that's outside the window, and she's like, I just want to see what is outside of this window.
Mm.
And she had to ask the husband for permission that, you know, can I go back to school? Can I go work? Because she moved to Netherlands when they had a son.
Mm.
And when the son started going to school, she had all this free time. And she became this amazing, successful entrepreneur.
Mm.
But to this date, she's never referred herself as the manager.
Mm.
Why? Because the husband empowered the woman, I mean, the daughter,
mm-hmm.
to be this, you know, she has masters, she has, she can walk in any boardroom.
She and has the qualification.
The qualification. Yes. So she is the manager or the managing director of what the mom actually built.
Mm. Wow. That's so deep. That's so
that
deep.
That dynamic and
that
wow.
is so yeah. deep.
And because of like, it intersects with what you were talking, you know, the story about
yes.
the man who, and you know, empowered the woman, the daughter and not his wife.
Yeah.
So as they were talking about, you know, the making of this multi-million dollar
industry.
Business, the husband was like, so what do you have to say, you know, based on the history where your wife started? It's like, I can only say I'm very proud of her. But my daughter has done incredible things. You know, we've been contracted. By the Rijksmuseum. We are the only migrant-owned company that actually, you know, has gotten this tender for 2 years, right?
But if the mother didn't like see that I can turn what I do normally yeah. into a business, mm-hmm. they would not be sitting there and getting interviewed by this media house.
Exactly. So, and he goes on and on to talk about how the wife is a friend to Queen Beatrice of mm-hmm. Netherlands. The wife has gotten invitation by kings in Morocco.
Mm.
When they come back
mm.
home,
mm.
and I'm like, okay.
It's almost like that statement, like, I want you to be good, but not better than me.
Mm.
So, you know, men, we do pose that question to you. Are you still that insecure?
Are you still that insecure? You know, when you were talking about relocating, and so like, you know, me and my dad moved to UK first, and then we followed him a year after, and we went in like the late 90s, right? So when me, my mom, my sister, and Angela, I think, can relate with this, that like an immigrant story, or when you move from Africa, is when I guess you realize that you're black, because then you're surrounded by different nationalities. Mm-hmm. And then when you look at people who are black, they are cleaners, they are working in care homes, or if they're really good, they're probably a nurse. So they're doing very, I guess, blue collar jobs or whatever. And so there's not many, don't seem to see, and when we moved, it was like Africans were the ones doing the cleaning job. They were the ones, and then maybe the Caribbeans are the ones in the office and whatever.
Very similar to states. There's like a stereotypical job for each ethnicity or yes. race, if you will.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So obviously when you move, then everyone just has this idea that, okay, cool. So this is the way it has been fashioned. This is the only way. But my mom was like, nah, me, I've never cleaned in my life. I have zero interest in care work or nursing or anything like that. I'm not going to do that. And she told my dad, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to sign up to an office agency, learn what it's like to work, you know, start getting into the way of things are in UK in terms of office. And, you know, my mom got a lot of backlash from women. They're like, oh, who does she think she is? You know, let life teach her, you know. Mm-hmm. she's gonna soon learn, and she'll soon join us, you know, in the care and the cleaning stuff. And for a long time, actually, my mom didn't really get on with or rather like just felt like uncomfortable around the women, because they were trying to make her think like, who does she think she is? She thinks she's better than us. Exactly. Yeah. And wow. So you know, she continued, she fashioned her way, she joined the agency, you know, she started working in offices, and has continued, actually, has never joined the system the way they thought. And it's really funny, because fast forward to years later, is a lot of now women are now going, getting their degrees, they're now getting those, you know, white collar jobs, so to speak, and following whatever they are interested in, following their dreams. But what that taught me, when I think about it, I admire my dad that he did not stop my mom for wanting to pursue her goals. He simply just, you know, showed her, and because he'd never pursued it that way. And then I just love that she was like, I don't care what you guys think, I'm gonna try. Like, life is about trying, and I know for me, this is not my path, this is my path. And she continues to tell that story. And so I think it just taught me that, like, again, when I'm dating someone, to think about, is this person adding value, encouraging me to go and pursue my dreams, or is he trying to shush me off? No, don't go for this job. And then at the same time, I as a woman, am I fashioning my way for my daughter or my sister behind me, like, to show them that they too can go forth and pursue their goals, mm-hmm. and not think about what anyone's thinking, and if other women are not for me, just to go for it. And so, like, it's nice to look at who your examples are around you, and whether they have perhaps even contributed. And I think maybe that's how I also got courage, because I saw that my dad's not gonna interfere in my way, and my mom's not gonna interfere.
Amazing. Because you brought right into the meat of this conversation. We are delving into the woman that was, mm-hmm. and the woman that is today. Mm-hmm. So let's talk a bit about, like, the history of black women, because we've seen the hypersexualization of black women. We were objectified for a while, even like women who came before us. We've seen how they have been treated. Maybe you can tell our audience or listeners, like, what does it mean when we talk about black history and women of in the history and the women of now?
I mean, when you talk about, you know, the black woman being objectified, I mean, it's still happening today. So even back in the day, they would take black women and sometimes put them in a zoo, if you will, or like a museum, and just stare at their bodies, like their bare naked bodies, because they are fascinated by, whoa, her bum is so huge, you know, whereas at the time, you know, Caucasian women were buying like girdles to create this sense of having a big bum.
I find that hilarious.
So historically, it's always been there, and it, you know, it still exists today. It's just a different form. You know, we're buying implants and things to emulate the black woman.
What was it like for you? Because, you know, you've grown up in America, and so I feel like when we talk about racism, America tends to be the country that where it's clear, like, while in UK, it's everyone's very politically correct. The racism is really chiniamaji. So what was it like for you to define yourself as a forceful Black woman in whatever field that you wanted to pursue?
One thing I will say that my parents got right is, you know, the African saying, it takes a village to raise a child. So for me, I grew up in a very African-American church, mm-hmm. and that became the cornerstone of me seeing very empowered and very vocal Black women constantly, you know, women who were speaking out, women that never settled. So that was the norm for me, you know. And of course, like you said, race in America does exist. And I think the level of expectation society sometimes puts on young African-American males or females is very low expectations. So it's like, oh, you're in a space that typically Black people don't belong. You know, what sport do you play? It's never about your merit or your brain sometimes. So
do you run like a Kenyan?
Yes. Yeah. I always was told to be on the track team, but I cannot. I ain't got no running genes at all.
Okay.
But also another thing that really did help me is when my parents first moved to the U.S., they went there very young, around 18 and 19, and they've always worked for themselves. So, you know, just being a kid and watching my parents work for themselves, being their own bosses, creating paths for other Kenyans coming into the U.S., it was normal for me to be a boss, you know? So I think that's one thing that they got right.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
I love it. And you know, talking about how you, like being the boss was actually handed over to you.
Mm-hmm.
We can dive into like what you understand as capitalism as a woman. So I think we had talked about this conversation, like money and women. And what was your
off air,
right? Yes. And we're talking about when you think about women and money, so our conditioning came from who? Men. So who did you, when you were growing up, who did you see making more decisions? In terms of money, who made more money, and how does that now bring this conversation where we have to react that money doesn't have to be male, you know?
Money is gender free. Let's start there.
Right?
It should be.
And it's youth free. Like it doesn't have age, it doesn't have gender, it doesn't have race. It's just money. It's whoever is willing to work to pursue it, it should be. But obviously, there's societies that say, oh, you're too young to pursue it, or you're of this gender, you can't do it, or you're of this race, you can't do it.
Then again, I think for me, coming from my grandma, I saw her being the boss. Like she did everything for herself, you know. She controlled most of the spending in our home. And a bit of like the handing down, the conditioning that she handed down to my mom, it's sort of mixed because she saw her dad making decision. Mm-hmm. But at the, you know, the pool of like my grandfather, my grandmother going to make her own money as well.
Mm.
So I think I can say purely, I think having this conversation, it separates us from just having these differences where women and men have to enjoy different resources or participation differently. Why can't we just exist and enjoy this fully just because we are all human beings?
I think for me, when I think about what you said, I think maybe what helped is that my mom and dad did not grow up in the same environment as their parents.
Mm-hmm.
So they made they defined their culture without prying eyes, without family, because they're so far away. So they're not seeing everyday decisions and what have you. They only seen us every few years when you come, and when we come, it's like for 2 weeks. So you're not really understanding the nature of their relationship. And so when I was thinking about what you were saying, you've grown up seeing your mom, you've grown up seeing your grandparents, while I have grown up just seeing my parents on an everyday, while my grandparents is more from a distance. So I don't like how they were raised and how they grew up and how they had money relations doesn't affect me, so to speak, because I didn't grow up close to them. But when I think back, like I have two sides. So my mom's side, my granddad was a primary provider, and then on my dad's side it was both, but at the end it became more my grandma. So I think for me, I've always had, but I don't like my money for me has no, it's just money. I'm just gonna be the one to wake up and go for it, like, yeah. What about you?
For me, my parents have always been a team. So my mom is a creative, she comes up with the genius money making ideas, whereas my dad is like the accountant, he's super organized. Mm-hmm. So they have always been a team, and that's how I've always just seen a business. It has to be a team effort. So yeah, that's high.
Yeah. And as we sit here, we feel pretty much empowered by the male or the male figures in our lives. That's what I'm hearing.
Yeah, I'm definitely. Yeah. I love my dad. I love my, like, especially one of my heroes is my mom's dad, like my grandfather. I really admire how hard he worked, and he made sure all his 10 children, you know, attended school until they were 18, you know?
Yeah.
And it's really hard when you're the primary breadwinner and, right, you know, build a home. And he was definitely the father who encourages his daughters to go to school. You know, my aunt is a lawyer, so like was very encouraging of education. So I can see the essence of encouraging your daughter and what have you to be better.
And that pretty much sums it up. That a world where difference is celebrated is possible. And the world is better if we are equal. And it doesn't, you know, equality, it doesn't mean women want to be men.
No.
We just want to be women and exist wholly.
We want the same choices. We want to have the same opportunities and not be judged because I am a woman. Although I am.
Yes. Yes, I am a woman, and I celebrate all the women that, you know, came before me. The likes of Wangwa Makeri, the likes of the women who were actually at the center of the declaration about gender equality and the commitments of our country 26 years ago. The likes of Nyiva Mwendwa, I'm here because they started the foundation.
I love that.
I am a woman, and I celebrate all those women that have been a part of my journey, from, you know, aunties from the community, my mother, my grandmother, my sisters, cousins, and of course you ladies.
Oh, thank you.
I celebrate you, sister.
I am a woman, and I celebrate the women that show me that you can do it. And that goes from my mother, that goes even just seeing my sister following in the same footsteps, to Sheryl Sandberg, who I really love, Oprah, who made me realize that, you know, you can be black and still be on TV and, you know, make loads of money. So just seeing women, from those that I know to those that I don't know and those that I admire. And to me also being that for another woman and a girl behind me. So,
and through the airwaves, the girls who are listening to us, whether you're in a matatu, whatever you are, sis, you matter, you're worthy, and we celebrate you. It's your girl Mo, and I'm out.
It's your girl Angela Wamboy, and can't wait for another session of Overreact.
It's your girl Lush, and it has been nothing but a pleasure to overreact and change the narrative, and also challenge you men and also women to do better and be better.
Follow this conversation on our socials, and it's at SisterSpeaks254 on Instagram and Twitter.
Let's overreact.